Welcome to the Cinemondo Podcast with Kathy, Mark, and Burke talking about movies. Horror, sci-fi, unusual, unknown, forgotten, underappreciated, always interesting. Hey, everyone.
Is it time for coffee?
Yeah.
I think I need more coffee. I had some earlier, and now I feel like I wish I had some right now.
I have a big thermal cup full of French roast right in front of me.
I may have to go make some.
Before we went on, we just were talking about coffee, and both Kathy and Burke have bought brand new coffee makers, and my coffee maker just broke this week.
So I'm
going to do the same thing. I'm getting through with French press, but I do want to have a good coffee maker, so I appreciate the suggestions they both told me about. So, but just coffee is just, you know, it's the staff of life, isn't it? Is that what they say in the Bible?
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think that is. It's a biblical thing.
I think it's in the statute of limitations, I think.
Isn't it's in the Bill of Rights.
The Bill of
the Bill. We have a right to a good cup of coffee. Well, you know, because I was always kind of like, I'm not a coffee connoisseur, but I want it to be good. You know, and I don't want to, because I drink it every day. And so eventually my coffee maker was really old and I decided I should get a new one. So I was doing all this research and I'm looking around and I just want a nice, good hot cup of coffee. I don't need a bunch of other stuff. So, you know, I settled on one that they said, this is just great coffee. So I got it and it's like a game changer for my last coffee maker. I'm like, okay, you can make good coffee at home. All right.
It's got to be what you're expecting when you wake up and you get up and you're like, okay, here comes the cup of coffee. This is the thing that you really look forward to in the morning, that first cup of coffee. It warms you up and it gives you a little bit of a little kick, you know. And you really want that first, and it's always the first sip, you know what I mean? It was like back when I used to smoke, it was always that first drag on the cigarette.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it was awful. Yeah, I mean, it was not awful, but it never lived up to that first drag or the first sip, you know. But you really want that cup of coffee to kind of simulate the whole cup should be as good as that first sip, right? Good to the last drop, as Mrs. Olson used to say.
But it is true that, you know, it's hard because, you know, you go to wherever you go and you go, well, that's inexpensive, so that must be crummy. And that's the way I look at wine. Oh, that's
right.
$4. That must be a piece of crap. This $50 one must be amazing.
You know? Right.
So, but that's not really true in wine. And in coffee, it's probably not really true either. You know, like, so you can go to these specialty coffee shops and it's like $25, $30 for a pound of coffee.
Right.
You know, like, was roasted yesterday. LA has plenty of those places. And it's really good. I'll take a flyer once in a while and buy that and come home and go, well, it's not as good as it was at the cafe. It's because they know how to make a perfect cup of coffee. But I think if you get a good coffee machine, almost any coffee you buy is going to taste good in that.
It's all about the temperature and the pressure and all these different little things that come together. And it just has to be what you like. Because one of the things that people make fun of me about is and I'm going to confess it right here on the podcast. I'm going to come clean. I'm going to come out and announce this
later.
Loud and proud. I enjoy Coffee Mate in my coffee. Non-dairy creamer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Dude, okay, I'm out. No because, more podcasting for me.
But it's funny because that's what I grew up with, you know? It was like it was like the coffee that you would get at work, you know what I mean? Like
it's nostalgic.
In the office. And for some reason, there's a vibe to that that I just am like, okay, that's what a cup of coffee tastes like to me. It's weird. And it's all about what you like, you know? If you like diner coffee, then maybe you need to get an old, you know, like, what is it? Like a bun coffee machine from a diner and just make it in the glass thing and leave it there for 6 hours. Maybe that's what you like.
Have a nice burnt coffee taste.
Yeah.
Well, the diner coffees, there's one company that is the king of diner coffees. I know this because of my past experience having a cafe, a store like that. It's called Ellis is the brand. Ellis Coffee. That is diner coffee that's sold with bun coffee makers.
Right. So if you comes with a bag.
When you want diner coffee, you have to, but it's wholesale only. You have to sort of find it.
Oh, yeah.
Get it
comes in a big burlap sack.
It's like, right. Comes like a huge, like, you know, 20-pound thing, and it's like one of those kind of things. But Ellis is the brand.
So explain to me, because this is something maybe our listeners are also interested, because I'm not a coffee connoisseur, but I know what I like. And I drink my coffee black. I don't want any extra flavors in it, so it has to taste good. And I drink it black because I don't want this one calorie drink to become a 100-calorie drink. I mean, right. Mostly it was like, I don't want to put a bunch of chemicals in it I don't need. I mean, the coffee is there to taste good and to get the heart pumping, but the rest of it, I don't want all this garbage in my diet. So I just like nice black coffee. What is the best, just good, straight black coffee? What are the differences between light, you know, medium roast, dark roast, French roast? Like, what is all of that?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I don't pretend to be a roaster, but I know that I was lived next to a coffee roasting place in Boston. And,
oh, that must have been nice.
Oh, my God. It was this huge iron
smell it all
thing.
Day.
Yeah. Yeah, smell it all day. And so it was just how long they roasted the coffee. You know, like if it was roasted longer, it would be a dark roast or a French roast. And it would be the beans would come out black.
Well, light what difference roast. Does that make in like flavor or strength?
Oh, it's just,
you know, is it just a flavor thing?
Oh, it's if you want that dark, not bitter is not the right word, but just that intense flavor that you
I
get
like that.
From a dark coffee. That's what I do. Like light roast to me just doesn't cut it. It's like weak tea. It just doesn't work. I want it to feel like a lot of people complain about Starbucks. I'm not going to say Starbucks is the greatest, but you do have a certain flavor. Yeah, it has a certain oomph to it that some other places don't, you know. So, yeah, but you can go to these high-end places, and there's no option. Like, there's a coffee place here that has no – you can't put anything in the coffee. You get it black, and if you say, can I have 7 Splendas? You know, there's no Splenda. There's no sugar. There's no milk. You get it black, and that's it.
Right.
See, that's how coffee should be. And, you know, I live down the street from Intelligentsia, which is like one of those gourmet coffee places that has the $20,000 coffee machine. Well, no wonder it tastes good, right? But you don't have to say, like, between my new coffee maker and them, like, I feel like their coffee is almost like has a little bit of a bitter aftertaste that I don't like. Mm-hmm. And I actually like the coffee that I get my new coffee maker makes. It's just better.
Well, you know, we have a friend who is literally a coffee roaster by profession, by trade.
I know a couple people who are doing roasting coffee now. I know how people do it. It's so funny. It's cool.
But he does it for this place called Old Town Roasting, which we'll give him a little plug here. And if our listeners listen to this and they start thinking, you know what, we want to hear about coffee along with weird movies, maybe we could have him on the show and get him to just talk about coffee, and then we'll talk about movies with him.
You know how some I listen to episode True Crime Garage where they pair like a beer with crime,
right?
And, you know, or Bloody Good Horror that talks about, you know, what kind of beer pertains kind of to the movie they're reviewing.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do a coffee roast with our movies and see which, you know, today we're having a, and then we'll have like a coffee roast that we like.
We'll be watching Saw, and with that we'll pair a light roast with hints of peppercorn and licorice. You
know. And a drop of blood.
And lashings of coffee mate.
Exactly. But we love our coffee here at Cinemondo.
Yeah.
It makes the world go around. Even though I think it makes me cough. Makes my throat dry,
oh, no.
But I can't stop drinking it.
What about Cinemondo coffee?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, roast. Didn't you see our logo with a bag?
Yeah.
Our logo and our it's made for a bag of coffee.
Okay, yeah. Everyone look out. We're going to start selling coffee soon.
Just like David Lynch. But you know what else? Okay, here comes. Okay, check out the segue I'm about to do here. I'm about to drop a segue on you guys. We love coffee, right?
French.
We really love coffee, but we also really love movies, right? Was that smooth?
What?
You're like Johnny Carson.
I know. I just took us right into that effortlessly. Didn't even notice that I changed the subject. But not only movies, but sometimes we like monster movies, and it's a separate category. I mean, there's, for some reason, I think monster movies, I have a feeling they're the oldest form of entertainment, the monster story. You know, I have a feeling that the very first stories that were ever told were stories about monsters.
Well, isn't Gollum like one of the oldest monsters? You know, I think it's like in the Jewish lore, it's a monster, kind of like a Frankenstein. I think, I don't know.
Yeah, it's very, very much a sort of a Frankenstein monsters. Story.
Yeah,
did have monsters in it.
What is
that? The Bible.
Oh yeah,
the Bible has monsters. That's an old book.
Oh yeah, there's Goliaths in there and
Blackula.
Yeah,
that's in Leviticus.
Blackula. Yeah, that goes way back. But yeah, you know, that it's like the funny thing about monster movies, though, is it's like they're not always. I mean, I imagine they were probably originally told by the ancient folks to make either the storyteller appear heroic, like, you know, I went out and I saw this 20-foot tall bear and I killed it with my bare hands. And everybody was like, wow. But I imagine another reason might have been to try to get people to obey you, you know, like I not only saw the monster, but I tamed it. And now it's mine. And if you go into this area, or if you take this or do this, or if you don't do this for me, I'll tell my monster to come kill you.
It's like Willard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this film Monstrum is interesting, Brooke, because it is set like in the 15th century or 16th century.
Yeah, with the movie that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. And it's called Monstrum.
You just threw that in there.
He just dropped it. Like we were already talking about it.
I dropped the mic.
Talking about Monstrum.
I dropped it.
Boom. In case you didn't notice, Mark talking about it.
But yeah, this is a kind of an ancient, you know, it's set in 1527. In Korea, and it's a monster movie. It's like a classic old timey monster movie that takes place in the olden days. What did you guys think of it?
Well, let's talk about it. So it's directed. Who's it directed by?
Oh, okay. It's a South Korean film. Came out in 2018. Directed by Hu Jong-ho, and it starts about
based on a true story.
Well,
based on a true, well, like a true,
based on an actual myth, I guess.
Yes.
Right. But it is set in 1527 during King Zhongzhong's dynasty or reign, where I guess there was a plague that was going through the country at that time.
Mm.
And there were in this story, there are rumors that there's a monster out there in the woods that is causing this and causing death and destruction. And that's legitimately sort of the start of the film.
Yeah.
But it really is about, there's a lot of political stuff in this. Like
yeah.
Political, mm-hmm. You know, like back factions and, you know, there's a king and then there's somebody else that wants to get in power. And
it's kind of a Korean Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
With a monster.
Good. Well put.
Mark didn't say that because he's never seen Game of Thrones, so
so he wouldn't know.
I don't know what that's about.
He can't make that reference.
Isn't that a movie about a hockey player or something? Game of Thrones.
That is a black mark on your record.
I've got many black marks. Believe me. If I gave you a list of the shows I've never seen, you'd be like, "Why is this guy on a podcast?" You know.
And then the ones you have seen, and the ones. Of those things,
but so. If you want to talk F Troop, I'm here. You know.
But I do like that the king is trying to blame plagues and monsters on why his plummeting popularity with the people,
right?
Which is kind of an interesting little parallel to the current administration.
And claiming that the plague is a hoax to discredit him and to kind of hurt his reign. It's interesting to watch this. I mean, it was made in 2018, so we were kind of in that style a little bit politically here.
Well, also, it's also called, I mean, I don't know if you make anything of this, you know, Monstrum is the English title.
Yes.
You know, Monstrum.
Yeah.
You know, which is part, you know, Trump is in there at the end. You know, name.
That's true.
You
is
know,
it
so.
An accident?
Yeah.
I think like that. So, but when you're watching, they go, oh my God, this is so many parallels to, you know, or commenting on American or Western politics.
Yeah.
I felt that very strongly in this movie.
Which is, interestingly enough, kind of a sort of a thing that's been done a few times before in other countries over there, you know, aiming the idea of America being represented by a giant destructive monster. You know, Godzilla is one of them, first of all. And do you guys remember hearing about this in the news? There was a movie called Pulgasari, which is hard to find, but it's from North Korea, actually. And when Kim Jong-il was in power, the story is that he had a filmmaker that he liked from South Korea, and he basically had this filmmaker kidnapped along with his actress wife, kidnapped them, brought them to North Korea, and forced them to make a giant monster, a kaiju, you know, kind of a giant Gamera Godzilla-style movie so that North Korea would have their own monster, you know. And of course, the monster is based on the horrible evils of capitalism in America. You know, you watch the movie, it's pretty interesting. It's like pretty blunt and all that, but it's it's also just kind of not very good. You can tell when a movie or when a piece of art is made under duress, you know, somebody's not quite
by someone
inspired.
Who was kidnapped and tortured.
Yeah,
they're really not putting their heart into it.
Right, it's the best I can do. That's it.
You know, what'd be interesting, because I feel like a lot of monsters and films are based on like a political or something happening in contemporary culture that they're trying to personify through a monster. And it'd be interesting to do a podcast about some of the monsters and, you know, including vampires, werewolves that are kind of paralleling with other events happening or other, you know, beliefs going on at the time. It'd be kind of cool to do a podcast about that, because this one's very clearly, you know, like Godzilla, it's pretty clear on what it's about.
Well, I think a lot of almost all the monsters, it seems like they represent fears and fears of the time, you know, like during the 50s, everybody was scared of the atomic bomb. So there was a lot of atomic monsters, you know,
and
they were also afraid, you know, the Cold War, they were afraid of secret communists and, you know, who's a commie pinko. So there were these movies like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where it was pretty overt that, you know, who's a communist? It might be your neighbor. It might be your wife.
And that was horrifying to people.
Paranoia, yeah.
Or the Monsters on Maple Street, the Twilight Zone episode was all about that, too.
Yeah. But this movie...
Do we have a trailer? Do we have a trailer we can run for this
movie? For Monstrum? Yeah, here's the trailer for Monstrum. It's a
people won't understand it, but you'll hear lots of cool sound effects.
It's a Korean film, so if you close your eyes, you'll see the subtitles on the inside of your eyelids. If this new software I have is working properly. Yes,
It didn't work, Burke. I didn't see the subtitles. Oh. It didn't work.
Okay.
My subtitles were in Farsi.
Mark, you have
to work on the software.
You have to click the preferences, Mark.
Well, at least someone will understand it.
To set your preferences.
Yeah, that was my fault. But obviously,
looking at the movie posters for this, and they have, you know, there's a lot of international ones, of course, because it's a, you know, it's from Korea, but the American version is kind of interesting because this is on Shudder. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, it's gone. It was supposed to be in theaters in September. I don't know if that meant last year, but it says in theaters in September on an American poster.
Right.
The copy line is "An ancient man-eating monster awakens," which is pretty generic copy. they show way too much, and all of these posters, they show the monster way too much.
I know.
I mean, you're just seeing the monster. It looks like a giant kitty cat.
Right.
We'll get to that. Then the typeface is like, looks like an old Western typeface because it says monster and kind of Western looking type.
Like Silverado really or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or is it kind of like Stranger Things a bit? The logo design?
Yeah.
Were they kind of going for the
Stranger
Things?
It feels very Western to me. It felt like El Dorado or something.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of a thing, you know.
It does look old timey Western, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's not, I mean, Stranger Things was kind of 80s neon, you know, logo. This is more kind of a distressed Western. I mean, technically, I guess it's kind of a showdown. I don't know.
But it's an old-fashioned movie. You know, it's kind of old-fashioned in that sense. You know, it's different factions battling it out, you know, in the countryside.
Yeah.
And it's got a full Korean cast. But go ahead, finish off on the posters.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, there's a really modern one that shows the monster from the side in silhouette. and it says the word Monsterman. It's kind of artsy with a white background. That one to me is really nice because you feel like you're just getting, you know, it doesn't have an antique look to it. I'm afraid, I think some of these, because they're wearing traditional, you know, 16th century, you know, garb in Korea, it might turn off some people who, oh, it looks old. I don't want to watch something that's old, you know, but the kind of interesting thing about this film, which I feel like the posters aren't getting, is that even though it is set in that time, it has a very modern, you know, lively sort of, you know, almost a Western sort of feel to it, where it had a lot of humor. It had, you know, some very colorful characters. It's not grim and old fashioned at all, you know, and that to me was what made it kind of work. So the posters aren't, they're really traditional. They're well made and they look good, but they show the monster way too much. I never think you should do that in a poster. You should never show the monster.
Especially in this movie, because there's a question.
Even though the monster's probably the best
thing. Yeah. But there's a question about the monster in this, and it's kind of interesting to watch it not knowing anything about it. You know, you kind of, I guess we've sort of let the cat out of the bag already by saying that there is, in fact, a monster in the movie. But the characters in the film go through a whole early chunk of the film not really knowing, and it kind of goes back and forth. Is there really a monster, or is this just made up to scare people? Is it a hoax? You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, And there's one familiar, it's all obviously an all South Korean cast, but there's one actor, Woo Sik Choi, who you've all, I'm sure, recognized from Parasite.
Yeah.
He played the son.
Yeah.
One of the main characters in that film. And he plays a general or something, like some sort of military guy in this. But the rest of the cast, but I agree with you, Kathy, it is very modern. The way it's filmed, it's the action stuff, it's very sort of, it moves along. You know, it's shot in a very modern way. It's not sort of like stagey and slow, you know, slow moving in that sense. Although I have to say that, you know, to your point, Burke, it does take a while to get to the monster, which usually I'm okay with. Like, yeah. It's like, you know, wait, we'll get the characters going. But I started saying, man, when are we going to get to the monster? I was starting to get to that, to my, you know.
But the thing is, once they do get to the monster, you get a lot of monster.
They don't hold back.
Maybe too much monster.
You get to see that monster. Yeah, I feel like they did. I mean, part of my issues with the movie, and which I really liked actually, is that the monster, first of all, is way too cute and adorable and cuddly. And it looks like a big kind of lion dog. It's like really cute and fluffy. And so you don't, I mean, I, as always, am on the monster side.
Oh, yeah.
All of these things, no matter what it looks like. So this one especially. And not only that, because there's an actual sequence where they go further back in time about where these creatures were raised as kind of royal kind of guard dogs in a way for the
like entertainment leaders. Pets for the emperor.
Right. They were just like pets, for the emperor. But so they show this one man who raised one of these, which raised this monster ultimately. They show him as a baby. And it looks like a little cute chow puppy.
Yeah.
That's what it definitely was.
Yeah.
With a little CGI face on it that was super cute. And so it shows them feeding it and they're playing. And I'm like, now, why am I supposed to not like this monster or like this monster? Because you're cheering the monster killing all the soldiers.
Right. Because they killed the bad guys. It comes out and kills the bad guys.
Yeah. And you get the feeling that these things only kill bad guys, which they were at the point. You know, but... You didn't want to see anything bad happen to the monster because these people fucking deserve it.
And, and as a puppy or a puppy monster, it was named Sparkles.
Right.
You know? So, you Sparkles, know? Yes.
And so, and they were sort of a hybrid. They were bred by the former king or something. And so they were, you know, so you felt bad for all of those monsters. And this was the only one that survived in the sewer. And that's how it got a plague. And the plague is how, you know... passes the plague because it was living in the sewers, feeding off the dead carcasses of, you know, whatever.
The former villagers that these people were slaughtering.
Yeah. So you obviously like, my favorite character movie by far was the monster. I thought even with all the other stuff going on, I have to say, I didn't really understand what, I didn't know, I knew who was bad and good, but I didn't really care that much about the infighting and all the sword fighting. I was bored to tears with that stuff myself. But, so
I liked I like the four main characters, you know, the father and the brother and the daughter and the the young general who comes and sort of falls for the girl, and you know, and they're all. It's one of those stories where Dad fought in the way he was an Obi-Wan Kenobi type. You know, he fought in the Clone Wars, and of course, you know, he's kind of an older, boring dad and uncle now. But they have this. You know, the girl finds out that they have this amazing history of fighting and being heroes, and then when all the stuff starts coming down, she gets to witness her own father being this amazing fighter, you know, and those were kind of cool scenes where she's like, wow, Dad, yeah, you know, Dad and Uncle, you know, they're great.
And the uncle was kind of like this, kind of like in the beginning, the kind of bumbling, kind of like
right,
overweight, kind of slobby guy. And then all of a sudden he turns on the, you know, the fighter, you know, instinct, and he starts to kick some ass.
Yeah.
And so that was, that was fun.
The training is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course the girl has inherited it. She knows how to use her bow and arrow and everything. They're, yeah, I mean, it kind of harkens back a little bit to the old martial arts films in that some of the action scenes are done in a way that is a little bit of an homage to those things where they had the zoom lenses, you know, where it would that like the zoom in on the face, and it just really had that sort of 70s martial arts afternoon, Saturday afternoon movie, you know, feel to it, which it had a little bit, but it was also, like you were saying, very modern. And Kathy, you were about to say something about how it was shot.
It was kind of a buddy movie.
Yeah.
Like, where they would have the two comical relief guys who, you know, were like, everybody be quiet, and then the one guy farts. And
right.
It's like, oh, that's
funny. Kurosawa type sidekicks.
Attention. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Very broad.
Oh, I thought that was the monster that did that. And he was
monster farted.
And he was trying to not,
because he looked at his friend, okay, like made the noise. I could, because his stomach was gurgling too, and that was like, there were some digestive issues in this film.
Yeah. I think there were a couple of different farts. There was the human fart, then there was a monster fart.
So. That's right. There was a bad smell. I mean, they were all like making faces.
Yeah.
But I thought it felt a lot like The Host, where it has this big, you know, where it's this weird humor, it has this big spectacular monster. It has this strange, almost comical kind of action sequences. So I think it's one of those movies, if you like The Host, you'll probably like this, because it's, you know, Korea is really good at this kind of stuff. They're very westernized in a lot of their filmmaking. So it's always very much, I feel like a lot of the style is based on Western films or other Korean films that were based on Western films.
And the image of a tough young woman with a bow and arrow too. That's a that's something that was in The Host as well.
Yeah, and a strong female character.
Yeah. She was very strong. What, Brooke, what do you think about the CGI? What do you think about the monster?
The monster was kind of cool. I like to see a monster that doesn't look like every other monster. There's so many times when you see monsters in movies and you're like, okay, it's one of those. You know, they pulled it from category B. But this one had a bit of a different look to it. I mean, it looked a little bit more like
fluffy and cute.
Yeah, it kind of looked a bit more like an animal. You know, it was like a big animal. Yeah. I thought it looked like a buffalo.
It looked like
which,
a lion.
To me, it looked a bit like a buffalo, which to me kind of implies a little hint of, you know, maybe this represents America again, you know, bringing the plague and, you know, and this whole idea, not specifically America, but they did mention there was something during that flashback scene that Kathy was talking about. He was saying that this emperor was obsessed with exotic creatures and beasts from all over the world, and he said they had collected them from far north and even as far as the far west.
Yes,
and the implication is that, you know, these ancient Korean people had traveled to the Americas, you know, and brought back maybe a buffalo. I thought. And bred it with some kind of a mutated bear or something, you know, because it looked like a cross between a giant bear and a buffalo to me.
I got a Pekingese in there somewhere.
Right, like a French bulldog or something.
Or Japanese chin or something.
Yeah.
There was some little
But the CGI was pretty standard. The special effects side of it, you know, this is pretty standard CGI for you know, the late 2010s, and there were a few physics problems, you know, when they're doing things jumping around and falling, and there's always an issue of not having it appear heavy enough, and there are a few times where it leaped and jumped and you didn't really get the sense of weight or presence. And there were also a few eyeline issues where characters were supposed to be looking at it and they seemed to be looking about, you know, 60 feet beyond it and things like that that sort of take you a little bit out of the realism of a CGI character. And you know what helps with that, and I think they did not do it in this film, what helps is if you combine your CGI with practical effects, like the way they did in things like Jurassic Park and a bunch of other movies, where you have your CGI for the action, for the life, you know, the running and the living things, but then, like, if the thing gets close to your face, they would have a real sculpted, you know, puppet head. And so the actors have something to look at, you know, and there were a few times in this where I felt like people who were in the scene together with the monster, you really didn't feel like they were seeing it the way we are. You know, it was like they're reacting to a tennis ball on a stick, you know, look here, this is where the monster's face is. And the people are looking and screaming at a tennis ball, you know, and unfortunately that sometimes is kind of a little bit glaring sometimes in some movies. It was a little bit glaring in this movie, and it could have been solved by making some full-sized models of this monster, some full-sized animatronics, but maybe they didn't have that in their budget.
Well, you know, considering this movie was made for $9 million, and it's also made in Korea, I feel like probably considering that movies nowadays for especially the amount of special effects in this were probably at least quadruple that. I mean, I could see a movie in Hollywood of this film being made for like $90 million at the least, you know? So absolutely. I feel like when you have something this low budget, I think, you know, they're probably just kind of winging it. But considering that budget, I mean, the effects look really good, I thought. And they, you know, they combine the live action with the CGI, and, you know, really convincingly. And I liked the big epic battles and, you know, the wardrobe, and, you know, it was all very dramatic. But I was really impressed because I think this is this guy's like second or third movie, and one of them was an animated film. So I feel like this is pretty impressive for such a short list of films. I'm very anxious to see what he'll do next because, you know, this was a really impressive feat considering budget and experience.
I thought the special effects were successful. I just felt like in some ways there's like this weird, you know, they call it the uncanny valley or something, and there's a weird sort of, or not, let me put it a different way, there's actually a real serious connection that you feel in your soul or whatever it is when you're watching a movie and you see the actor who's actually inhabiting the same actual space as the monster, or a puppet of the monster, or a physical effect prop of the monster. And I felt like there were a lot of scenes in this where that I didn't get that connection. I didn't feel like the monster was there in the room with the people. And I think that connection sometimes is what really sells a monster in a film, or a creature, or some kind of alien, or whatever it is.
What did work for me, I mean, was the setting, you know, the actual, like, the palace, and the sense of where you were, the palace, the village, and then sort of in between the woods. I mean, I really got a sense of where things were in relation to other places.
Yeah.
So I thought I did a really good job of, like, okay, I know where they are in relation to the palace. Because they had some shots where they fire the flare arrow. So you see far away over the ridge, you see, I can sense how far they are away from the palace or the village. And so that was really, that kept me really involved, like, you know, the geography of it. Cause that's so important to me in these kind of movies. Where are these people?
Yeah.
You know, like, where is the monster in relation to the village? How close is the monster to, you know, and then, oh, you find the monster is actually underneath the palace and all this kind of stuff. So that I thought was really like the strong point. Like, I really got a sense of a different place. You know, I agree with a lot of stuff you say about the monster. It felt like it felt very CGI to me, in the sense that I didn't sense that weight of the monster, you know. So I didn't sense that the danger that people were in, you know, I didn't get that. So
that urgency.
I think part of it too. Yeah. I don't think, especially in the beginning, no characters we liked were really in danger, because it seemed like the creature was only after these terrible soldiers, you know, fighting for the king who's been abusing his people the whole time. So, but there was something just really viscerally great to see this giant creature jump in amongst all the soldiers, just wiping them out, and basically disintegrating them, arms and legs flying. They just in there, and they're all like, okay, we're going to fire on them all at once. And it's just like, doesn't make any difference, and he just goes and just wipes them all out. That felt really good. And I think I was just so in love with this monster and how it looked that I just forgave it everything. I mean, I want a stuffed animal of this. I wanted that great thing at the end. I want to have like a scene where the eye is opening and you know he's still alive. I wanted to see that, like Godzilla trick, where you think he's dead and he's not, or whatever. You want to see that kind of a trick. But who knows? I mean, the thing is that this movie did really well, which if it made it here and it's on Shudder, it's probably doing pretty well. They might make a part two, and maybe there'll be another cute little chow puppy that was in the sewer that everyone forgot about, and that now he's grown up and he wants revenge for because they killed his mother. You know, but I love the design of this creature, even though I feel like it made me a little vulnerable to it causing having anything, you know, bad happen to it. Yeah. So I was a little stressed the whole time because it was just way too cute. Sparkles.
Yeah. I mean, there were a couple of
a monster named Sparkles.
There's a little bit of humor in this film too, and one of the things. I mean, we're totally spoilering this film. There's one scene where one of the characters seemingly dies, and it's one of those scenes where it's like, "Go without me," and it's like, "No, no, no," and you assume it's one of those sacrifice scenes. You know, locks the door, and the other people have to leave, but they're reaching out with their hand, and they're saying, "No," and he's like, "Yes, I must do this."
And they push him out the door to create a big sacrifice.
Yeah, it's one of those scenes, and you expect it to end, you know, the way they always end. But, you know, huge spoiler, but I have to say how much I love this. Turns out he survived in this really almost ridiculously contrived way that was so funny because
it was
one of the you don't know how he survived, but because he couldn't have survived, you know. But then one of the characters basically kind of stops and goes, "Wait a minute, how did you not die?" And so we get a flashback of what happened, and it involves, you know, this contraption kind of a thing that
you definitely would have died.
Yeah,
if it happened, you would be dead, break your neck.
Yes, yeah, but it was funny to me. It was like, you know, I won't give away what happens, but it was one of those kind of funny, like, oh, that's. I know that they did that for a fact. They did that for laughs, you know?
Yeah, I was assuming, like, you know, something happened to him and he landed in the monster because he's all soft and fluffy, that he survived because the monster's so soft and fluffy.
Or I was expecting that the monster saved his life, you know? But it wasn't. It was, unfortunately, a sad ending.
You know,
well, the jury's still out for me on that ending.
I think they can easily have a Monstrum 2.
Yes.
Or, you know, like whatever. But I think there was the tongue is planted somewhat in the cheek in this movie.
Yes.
You know, like, there's a lot of wink, wink. You know, this is right. People are talking in a very modern way in this movie.
Yeah.
That's not the way 15th century or 16th century Koreans spoke, I'm sure.
Right.
You know,
which I think makes it more accessible, which is why I think the marketing's a little off. I mean, though that's their wardrobe, it's true to the film, is that I'm afraid people are going to think it's a stilted, old fashioned, you know, hard to relate to because everyone's speaking in this very formal way, except that it's not. I mean, it's sort of, they just play around with it. They're not trying to make a historical document.
Right.
They're trying to make just a fun, accessible, which it is, very, very westernized feeling film. And I think they did pull that off. It's very, you know, you just don't have to expect too much from it. It's gorgeous. You know, the wardrobe's great. It's a unique location. You know, the monster's very fresh and new. It's like, just enjoy it on a light level. Nobody needs to, like, get too heavy with it. You know, it has some lessons in there about politics and creating plagues to make you look bad, which I think is kind of currently an interesting idea.
And plus, any monster movie, you know, is worth watching in my book, you know. There's not that many out there. So if you get a Korean monster movie, you're going to watch it, you know, and at least give it a shot. And this is definitely worth seeing. I don't want to come across as somebody that didn't like the movie. I had problems with it, but I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah.
And it's on Shudder.
It's on Shudder. And, you know, I love Korean films. This is another reason. People, you really should explore foreign films. I mean, Parasite, you know, a Korean film just won Best Picture at Oscars for a very good reason.
Yeah.
Because it's great. And if you go back into it, especially like I watch a lot of their crime and horror films, there's some incredible Korean cinema that is not like, you know, something you can't relate to. It's all very, very relatable and really well made. I mean, they're some of my favorite films are Korean films. So everyone needs to check in there and check on it because, you know, even, you know, the Parasite director did The Host, which is another great monster movie. It's like, that's a great one to start with if you like this because it's very similar in tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing you were just saying about some people think that foreign films and I think particularly Western audiences are maybe less inclined to watch a foreign film from an Asian country because they think the culture is so different from Western culture. They might be more inclined to watch like a French or Italian film because they think, oh, it'll be a little bit more like we are, you know? But actually, there's no difference in the people, you know? And even in the era of this, you know, in the 1500s or whenever, you know, when you watch a film, if it's good storytelling and if you've got good performers, There's nothing, you know, otherworldly about the culture in a lot of these movies. I mean, sometimes there's a few little cultural things that we don't get because there's, you know, ritual or whatever. But for the most part, people are people, and they always have been. And when you look at even older films from, you know, like Japan, for instance, like the old Kurosawa films, I think some people are really scared of Kurosawa films, you know, like Rashomon and Seven Samurai and all that. And they look at Seven Samurai and they're like, oh my God, it's 3 hours of ancient Japanese culture. And, you know, but the thing is, sit yourself down and start watching The Seven Samurai. And about 5 minutes into that film, you know everybody in there. You know their motives. And you're in it. You're in there and you love it.
And it's so lively and it's very accessible. And absolutely. You're hooked almost instantly. Like, I was kind of like, I guess I should watch Seven Samurai. Like, I have that little element of resistance also. Like, I just want to watch trashy stuff, easy to digest. And then you watch it and you're like, that was amazing. Like, it's so surprising how good it is.
It's not like going to school at all.
Great filmmaking. It can be very entertaining, too. And to me, like, Train to Busan is one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite zombie movies.
So great.
Nobody should be steered away from that because it's a South Korean film. That's ridiculous. It's fantastic. It has some of the best action, beautifully shot stuff. The shot where they're attacking the train in the station is just it blew me away.
Fantastic.
You know,
and the Korean.
There's going to be a part two. Sequel. Yeah,
but the Korean filmmakers are really doing some great stuff these days. It's like I remember, you know, like however many years ago, you didn't really hear much about Korean film. And then suddenly there was this culture of Korean film, and I guess maybe we just didn't hear about it. I'm sure Korean people have been making movies for forever, but suddenly there's like this, you know, wow, Korean film is something to look at, you know, something to pay attention to. And there's some really amazing filmmakers coming out of that country, and, you know, Academy Awards just sort of showed that.
It used to be like, you know, like Japanese films.
Right.
And then we went into like a Hong Kong with the John Woo and the Wong Kar Wai, you know, and that was kind of all right, I'm going to watch that Asian film group. But Korean, like, I didn't know about Korean filmmaking until very recently.
Yeah.
Me personally, anyway.
Well, I got hooked on it. One of the first ones I was reading reviews because I'm always trying to find more obscure horror or crime or whatever. And, The Memories of Murder was getting a lot of attention at the time. I think it had just come on Netflix. So I was going to watch that. And that's also by the same director who did Parasite, one of his first films. That movie was so good. And it's like, wow, what? And that just opened the door to me like, oh, my God, Korean film is out there? What? And so I just started watching everything I could get my hands on that was Korean. I mean, they just do so much great stuff. So you just have to go down the rabbit hole because I haven't been disappointed yet in a single Korean film that I've seen.
Right.
How about wasn't The Wailing Korean? That movie, wasn't it called The Wailing? WAILING. Yeah. I think that was a Korean. That was a great movie too. You know,
so good.
So there's so plenty out there, and they're all on Netflix or Shudder or Hulu or whatever. So,
I Saw the Devil. Is that Korean?
Mm.
Sure. I don't know,
like,
that one.
They do really good crime and, you know, like serial killer movies. Also, they're really.
Oh,
good.
I Saw the Devil. Is that the kind of the cop? Like,
that's a Korean film. Okay.
Yeah, I love that. That one has a fantastic poster.
Yeah.
So good. So those, you know, so we're reviewing Monster, but we're also reviewing every Korean film known to man you need to watch.
Well, they're all the ones.
Watch them.
They're really well made. And again, I mean, we say this every time we talk about a foreign film, but don't be turned off by subtitles. Honestly, you will stop. You will forget about it in 2 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, and then you'll just be into the story because these movies are that good that you don't mind, you know, reading. But the thing is, you can't be multitasking when you watch one of these films, a foreign film. You have to actually watch the movie because you have to read it.
That's the problem.
Oh,
sometimes.
And also The Burning, which we did an episode about The Burning, another incredible Korean film.
Mm.
Maybe that's what I'm talking about, not the wailing.
The burning.
Well, there's the wailing. But
well, there is. Okay. I'm thinking of the burning. Yeah.
Anyway. The burning was really interesting.
So good. Yeah. Really good.
Yeah, that was one we talked about. We did an episode about that, didn't we?
Yeah.
That one's more present day. Like some things are, like the wailing, I think, is more traditional.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not sure how far back they go, but yeah, burning was very contemporary. And
someone with Stephen Yeun.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, then the thing, Memories of Murder and I Saw the Devil, that's all contemporary, you know, police detective crime stories that are really hardcore. And the detectives are always super damaged.
Right.
In Korean films, detectives are almost worse than the killers. They're right. Always just really awful. And like they're tortured by whatever happens. You know, it's like, so they're so good.
Yeah. So great storytelling.
So there you go.
So let's hear it for Korea.
Yay, Korea.
Except for North Korea. I think the movie that I've seen from North Korea, that
Korea.
Movie.
Oh, North Korea.
But that movie, Pulgasari, I was talking about. From North Korea, it's a giant monster movie and all, and it is a period film as well. But
don't support that.
It's
what
not,
about
it's
that North Korean film with Seth Rogen?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I actually really like that movie. Oh, no. Randall Park.
What was it called?
It was called The Interview.
Yeah.
Where they go to interview, Kim Jong Un.
Yeah.
I like. Was it Kim Jong Un or they? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Randall Park played him. Yeah, it was.
Yes.
I thought it was really funny, but maybe it's not so funny now.
Yeah.
Time.
I know.
It's probably a little too close to home right now. But.
Right.
So definitely go out there and start investigating Korean films. You could start with Monster, you could start with Burning, you could start with The Host, Parasite. Like, there's so many great ones. So
yeah, the Burning is one I keep thinking about every so often. That was a strange kind of disorienting film, and it had a lot of the kind of things in it that I really like in movies, and mystery and strangeness and weird characters that you can't figure out, and then you figure them out, you know. And it's beautifully shot, and the great performances and music and all that stuff. So yeah, we're big advocates
and the settings
of Korean
of that
film.
Movie.
Yeah,
we're like I can't. Like, I keep thinking of that country home. I remember that very well. I remember the house where he had that little apartment.
Yeah.
It was so well shot. Like, to me, that takes me right into a movie. If you can, you know, get a sense of setting and place and know where you are.
I feel that way too about this movie. Yeah. I remember where he parked the car to wait, you know, out in the street. I can still remember the layout of the street and where the
and the guy would come out of the parking garage.
Yes.
It's just like a sense of place and following and all that was just beautifully done.
Yeah,
you know?
That's important
really,
for story.
That adds 2 points to a movie to me. You know, just like okay, I'm getting where we are. I'm there with people. You know.
So this is going to be sort of an ongoing conversation about Korean films.
Yes.
We're not going to stop
Korean
here.
Film reviews. All
and
right.
If there are other foreign films from different countries that you guys champion, please let us know, because we're always, you know, there's so many other movies out there that there's so many movies to see and a lot that we don't know about. Please let us know by emailing us or checking us out on social media on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter.
We love recommendations. And as we always say, if we use one of your recommendations on air, you win a prize.
Your name mentioned on the air.
Yeah.
That's the prize.
And a can of, and a can of Folgers.
Yeah.
Don't say that. You're going to end up sending it.
You're paying for it, Mark.
That's okay. I got a couple cans here. Come on, Folgers. Bring me some coffee.
We'll get a can of Folgers and we'll put a Cinnamondo sticker on it and we'll call it Cinnamondo Coffee. And you get a free can of Cinnamondo Coffee.
It's the same color.
I'm very interested in exploring that idea.
That would be fun.
All right.
Maybe we should talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening, as always.
Yeah, it was fun. We're gonna talk more about Korean films in the future, I promise. But until next time, this is Cinemondo, signing off.